This week in Claude Code, this week moved fast on Claude Code with several releases landing across just 2 days. The headline is version 2.1.166 out June 6th. The biggest addition is a new fallback model setting. You can now list up to 3 fallback models tried in order for when your primary model is overloaded or simply unavailable. And the fallback flag finally takes effect in interactive sessions, not just print mode. Claude Code will also retry a turn once on the fallback when the API returns an unexpected error. If you've ever had a session die in the middle of an Anthropic load spike, this is the fix. Drop a fallback model into your settings and you degrade gracefully instead of failing hard. The details are in the changelog. That same release expands your thinking controls, setting max thinking tokens to 0 or passing thinking disabled. Now genuinely turns thinking off even on models that think by default. That's a real latency and cost lever for the times you don't need the reasoning. There's also a new glob in deny rules. A single asterisk in the tool name position denies every tool at once, which makes locking a session down much simpler. And there's a quiet but important security fix. Messages relayed between Claude sessions no longer carry your user authority, so one session can't escalate permissions inside another. The current version as I record this is 2.1.167, a bug fix patch on top. Going back a couple of days, version 2.1.163 added a few things worth flipping on. Stop and subagent stop hooks can now return extra context to feed Claude without it being treated as a hook error, so your end of session hook can cleanly nudge the model instead of looking like a failure. There's a new plugin list command with enabled and disabled filters, and for organizations' new required minimum and required maximum version settings, let Claude Code refuse to start when the installed version falls outside an approved range. On the API side, June 5th brought a deprecation notice. Claude Opus 4.1 is being retired on the API on August 5th, 2026, with Opus 4.8 as the recommended migration per the release notes. If any of your scripts or configs pin the old Opus 4.1 model ID, grep for it now and move over before the cutoff so nothing breaks while you're not looking. Running Claude Code without your hands on the keyboard, for the last dozen episodes, you've been the human inside the loop. You drive a session, you read the diff, you approve the risky step, you press enter. Today, we pull you out of the middle of that loop and turn Claude Code into something you can call from a script. Same agent, same tools, same loop. The only thing that changes is who's standing in the middle of it. Anthropic describes that loop the same way for every one of their agents. Gather context, take action, verify the work, repeat. Interactive Claude Code runs exactly that loop, and so does headless Claude Code. The difference is that interactively, a human approves each risky step as it comes up. Headless, you've pre-decided what's allowed in code before the run ever starts. Hold on to that sentence, because every flag and every option we touch today is really about making that one pre-decision safely. Here's something that surprised me when I went digging in the docs. The headless page and the agent SDK page describe the same product. The command line reference literally defines print mode as query via the SDK, then exit print mode isn't a lightweight cousin of the SDK. It is the SDK wearing a command line costume, so we'll start with the command line because it's the fastest way in, and then peel back to the SDK underneath it, print mode where Claude becomes a Unix citizen. The entry point is print mode. You add dash p lowercase to any Claude command, and instead of dropping you into the interactive interface, it answers your prompt, prints the result, and exits. The doc's own example is about as plain as it gets. Claude, dash p, and then in quotes, what does the auth module do? That's the whole thing. You get text back on standard out because it exits cleanly and writes to standard out. Print mode behaves like any other Unix tool, and that means the entire shell is suddenly available to you. You can pipe a file and cat a build error into print mode with a prompt like, concisely explain the root cause of this build error and redirect the answer into a file. You can use command substitution, pipe a git diff straight into a prompt, chain the result through grep and jq. The model becomes one more stage in a pipeline, one limit to know upfront. As of version 2.1.128, standard input is capped at 10 megabytes. Go over it, and the process exits with a clear error and a non-zero status. If you're feeding something huge, write it to a file and point the prompt at the path instead of piping the whole thing in. Worth remembering before you pipe a giant log file and sit there wondering why it died on you. Making CI runs deterministic with bare mode. There's a flag a lot of people haven't met yet, and it matters more than its size suggests. It's called Bear Mode. Run Claude with the bear flag alongside Print Mode, and it skips auto-discovery of hooks, skills, plugins, MCP servers, automatic memory, and your Claude.md faster startup. Yes. But the real prize is determinism. Think about what regular Print Mode actually loads. It pulls in the same context an interactive session would, including a teammate's hook sitting in their home directory config or an MCP server declared in the project's .mecp file. On your laptop, that might be fine. In CI, on a fresh runner, or on a colleague's machine, it's a different environment every single time, and your script behaves differently for reasons you can't see from where you're sitting. Bear Mode reads none of that, so you get the same result on every machine. In Bear Mode, Claude has only three tools: run a shell command, read a file, edit a file, you hand it everything else explicitly. Extra instructions go in through the append system prompt flag, configuration through the settings flag, servers through the MCP config flag. And because Bear Mode skips the keychain and the OAuth reads, your authentication has to come from an environment variable or a small key helper. The docs are blunt about this. Bear Mode is the recommended way to run scripted and SDK calls, and it'll become the default for Print Mode in a future release, so you may as well adopt it now. This is all spelled out in the headless docs. Getting structured data out instead of prose. Now, the single most important habit for scripting Claude, and the source of a pitfall I'll keep coming back to. By default, Print Mode gives you plain text. That's fine for a human reading the terminal, and a disaster for a script, because you end up writing regular expressions against English prose that changes its wording on every run. Instead, reach for the output format flag. It takes three values. Text is the default. JSON gives you a structured object, the answer plus a pile of metadata. And stream slash niskis giskis gives you The JSON envelope is where the good stuff lives. You get a result field which holds the actual text answer. That's the one you usually want. You get a session ID. You get the total cost in US dollars for that single invocation, along with a per model cost breakdown, so a script can track spend per call without ever opening the usage dashboard. You get the duration, the number of turns, an is error flag, and a subtype that tells you exactly how the run ended. You pull the answer out with a one-liner, pipe the JSON into JQ, ask for .result, done capture, .session ID into a shell variable, and you've got a handle to continue the conversation later. If what you want is typed data rather than prose, there's an even cleaner option that's newer than a lot of people realize. It's the JSON schema flag. You hand Claude a schema describing the shape you want back, say an object holding an array of function names, and the structured answer comes back in a dedicated, structured output field. No parsing prose, no hoping the model formatted its list the same way twice. You either get the object you asked for, or you get a schema violation you can detect mechanically. That distinction matters more than it looks, and we'll lean on it in a minute. The full flag list lives in the headless reference. Streaming, and the events that tell you what's happening. When you want to watch a long run unfold rather than wait for the end, switch to stream JSONs. Each line is a JSON event as it happens. Pair it with the verbose flag and the include partial messages flag, and you can even stream the answer token by token, filtering on the text deltas with JQ if you want that live typing effect in your own tool. Two events are worth knowing by name. The first is the init event, the very first line which reports the model, the tools, the MCP servers, and the plugins that loaded, including a plugin errors array. That array is your hook for failing a CI job when a plugin didn't load the way you expected. The second is the API retry event, emitted right before a retryable failure gets retried. It carries the attempt number, the delay, an error status code, and an error category. Those categories include rate limited, overloaded, authentication failed, and one called billing error. Circle that last one in your mind. After June 15th, it's the event you'll be watching for, and we'll get there before the end. The flags that put walls around a run. A handful of Print Mode flags exist specifically to bound an unattended run, and they're the bones of safe automation. Max turns caps how many turns the agent takes, and when it hits the ceiling, it exits with an error rather than grinding on forever. By default, there's no limit at all, which is exactly what you don't want in a script that might loop. More directly, Max Budget USD sets a hard dollar ceiling. Pass it $5 and the run stops when the estimated API cost reaches $5, ending with a subtype that says it ran out of budget. For a batch job, that one flag is the difference between a known maximum and an open tab you find out about later. Then the model controls. The model flag picks your model by alias or by full name. The fallback model flag, the one I mentioned in the news, auto falls back when your default is overloaded, and note the asymmetry. It takes effect in print mode and background sessions, but it's ignored in interactive ones. For batch work, you'll often pin a cheaper model like Sonnet and let Opus stay home. And then the permission flags, which are really the heart of all this. Allowed Tools lists the tools that run without prompting. Disallowed Tools denies them with a subtle twist worth pausing on. Name a bare tool and you remove it from the model's context entirely. But write a scoped rule like deny any bash command starting with RM, and the tool stays available while only the matching calls get blocked. There's also a separate tools flag that restricts which built-in tools exist at all, which is a different question from allowed tools. One decides what's auto-approved, the other decides what's even on the table. We'll put all of these to work in the pitfall section. One more pair that trips people up, system prompt versus append system prompt. The append flavor adds your instructions on top of Claude's default prompt, preserving its built-in tool guidance, its safety instructions, and its coding conventions. The plain system prompt flavor replaces the default entirely, which means you've thrown away all of that and you now own whatever the task still needs. The docs are clear. Reach for replace only when you're building a non-coding agent in a pipeline that no human watches. The rest of the time, append and keep the safety rails Anthropic wrote for you. Chaining turns across separate processes. Each print mode call is a fresh process. So how do you hold a multi-step conversation? Through the session primitives you already met back in the very first episode, the same resume mechanic now driving a script instead of your fingers. Continue, the dash C flag picks up the most recent conversation in the current directory. Resume dash R takes a specific session ID or name. You can even pin a session ID up front with the session ID flag, handing it a UUID you chose rather than capturing one after the fact. And fork session, when you resume, mints a brand new session ID instead of mutating the original, so you can branch off a run without trampling. The version you came from, the canonical recipe is two lines: start a review with output format JSON and capture the session ID into a shell variable, then call print mode again with resume and that variable, saying continue that review, even though it's a completely new process. Resume reloads the entire prior transcript from disk, every file it read, every bit of analysis it did, so the word that still resolves to the right thing. It's the resume button from episode 1, except now a shell script is the one pressing it. Why you can't trust the exit code alone? Here's a trap that bites people writing their first robust script. The Unix contract holds for hard failures, standard input over the cap, max turns exceeded. Those give you a non-zero exit, so a simple error check catches them. But a model refusal where Claude reads your task and politely declines in prose is still a successful run at the process level. Exit 0, subtype success. You cannot tell from the exit code that the agent didn't actually do the thing you asked, so don't branch on the exit code alone for anything that matters. Use output format JSON and branch on the ease error field and the subtype, which distinguishes a clean success from out of turns, out of budget, or an error during execution. Better still, force a JSON schema, so a refusal yields an empty or invalid structured output that your code can catch, instead of you grepping the prose for the word sorry. And for a CI preflight, there's a cheap check. Claude auth status exits 0 if you're logged in, and 1 if you're not, so you can fail fast before the real work even starts. Podcaster can build an entire show for you. No source material required. Give it a topic, say a weekly digest of your field, and it does the web research, writes each episode, and publishes them to a feed on whatever schedule you set. A living podcast that keeps itself current while you go about your day. Spin one up at ocdevel.com/podcaster. Scripting patterns you'll actually copy. Let's make this concrete with a few workflows you can lift straight into a project. First, generating a commit message. Run print mode with a prompt like look at my stage changes and write an appropriate commit, and allow it just the handful of git commands it needs. Git diff, git log, git status, git commit. And here's a genuine footgun in the permission syntax. So listen closely, because it's the kind of thing that silently widens your blast radius. When you write an allow rule like bash git diff space asterisk, that trailing space before the asterisk actually matters. With the space, it matches any command that starts with git diff. Without the space, git diff run together with the asterisk would also match git diff index and other commands you never meant to allow. One missing space quietly broadens what the agent can run. That detail is called out directly in the headless docs. Second, and this is my favorite because it's so cheap, a project typo linter wired right into your package file as a script. Pipe git diff against main into print mode with a prompt that says, in effect, you're a typo linter, report each typo as file name and line number and nothing else. Notice the move here because you piped the diff in through standard input. Claude needs no bash permission at all to read it. The data arrives as input, you never had to hand it a tool to go fetch it. Fewer tools, smaller blast radius. That least privilege instinct, feed the data in rather than grant the tool, is genuinely the whole game in headless work. Third, a permissioned CI run with no human approver. Pass permission mode accept edits, and Claude will auto-approve file writes and benign file system commands like mcardl and mv. But other shell commands and network calls still need an explicit allow rule, or the run aborts the moment one is attempted. There's a stricter mode called don't ask, which denies anything not explicitly allowed or already in the built-in read-only set. And the docs flag it as the one for locked down CI. In an unattended run, there is nobody to click approve, so that allow list plus your permission mode is your security boundary. That's the whole boundary. There isn't another one. One limitation to call out because it connects right back to earlier episodes. The slash command skills you invoke by name interactively, like slash code review, are interactive only. In print mode, you cannot type slash code review. You describe the task in prose instead. Skills still load as auto-invoked capabilities, and the SDK can expose them, but the slash name invocation simply doesn't exist headless. There are a few exceptions that ship dedicated headless equivalents, like running Ultra Review non-interactively against a target, which is a nice callback to the Ultra Plan and Ultra Review episode, but the general rule holds the interactive slash menu isn't there when no one's watching. The Claude Agent SDK. Everything so far has been the command line. Now let's open it up, because for a real application, you'll want the library that lives underneath print mode. First, a naming thing that'll save you some confusion. In late September 2025, Anthropic renamed the Claude Code SDK to the Claude Agent SDK. The reason is the interesting part. The same harness that powers Claude Code turned out to power almost all of their agent loops, research, support, legal, video, not just coding. So the Python package moved from Claude Code SDK to Claude Agent SDK. The NPM package moved out of the Claude Code namespace into Claude Agent SDK, and the Options class went from Claude Code Options to Claude Agent Options. If you stumble on an older tutorial using the code names, that's your translation table. The details are in the migration guide. What the SDK actually gives you is the load-bearing point of this whole episode. It is not a thin wrapper around a single model call. It hands you the same tools, the same agent loop, and the same context management that power Claude Code, programmable in Python and TypeScript. The tool use loop, the automatic context compaction, the built-in file and shell tools, all of it runs inside your own process on your own files. Contrast that with the raw messages API, the lower-level Anthropic client. With the client, you make one model call and you implement the tool loop yourself. You check whether the model wants to use a tool, you execute it, you feed the result back, you call again around and around until it's done. Maximum control and a lot of plumbing you have to maintain. With the Agent SDK, you write one line async for over a query, and Claude handles the tools autonomously inside the loop. Anthropic walks through exactly this contrast in their write-up, building agents with the Claude Agent SDK. So when do you use which? The docs lay out a simple grid. Reach for the raw messages API when you want a single call and your own tool execution, full control. Reach for print mode on the command line for interactive development, one-off tasks, and quick shell automation. Reach for the Agent SDK as a library for CI pipelines, custom applications, and production automation, where you want the full agent loop running on your own files and infrastructure, with the session state sitting as plain files on your own disk. The docs note that many teams use both, the command line for daily development, the SDK in production. The SDK in TypeScript. In TypeScript, you install the package under the @Anthropic AI scope, Claude Agent, est egi, and the binary for Claude Code ships bundled as an optional dependency, so you don't install the CLI separately. The main entry point is a function called query, and it returns something you can async iterate. Each message streams out as the agent works, you pass it a prompt and an options object, you loop over the messages, and you pick out the result when it arrives. That options object is where all those command line flags reappear as fields: model, allowed tools, disallowed tools, permission mode, max turns the working directory, max budget USD, fallback model, MECP servers, hooks, system prompt, and a permission mode type whose values are the same modes we discussed: default, accept edits, bypass permissions, plan, don't ask, and auto. If you learned the flags, you already know the options. Two things. The SDK gives you that the bare command line can't. First, custom in-process tools. You define a tool as a function right there in your code, give it a name, a description, and a schema for its arguments, and register it through a small in-process server helper with no separate MCP supercast manage. Second, live control of a running agent. The query object exposes methods to interrupt it mid-run, change its permission mode on the fly, swap the model, or stream new input in while it works. You're not just firing and forgetting, you can steer it in flight. The SDK in Python is the same shape with two flavors. You install Claude Agent SDK, and you need Python 3.10 or newer. If pip tells you there's no matching distribution, your interpreter is too old, that's the tell, not a broken package. There are two entry points. The query function is the one-shot, async for over it, and you get a fresh session each call. Claude STK client is the stateful one, for a continuous conversation that remembers itself. You open it inside an async with block, send a query, read the response, then send another query that still has the context from the first. Ask what's the population of that city after what's the capital of France, and that city resolves correctly because the client held the thread. It also exposes connect, interrupt, set permission mode, and set model methods for the same live control the TypeScript side has. Custom tools use a tool decorator plus a create server helper, the same idea as TypeScript, just spelled in Python. And the SDK exposes the full Claude Code feature set in code. Hooks on events like pre-tool use and post-tool use. Sub-agents, defined as agent definitions and invoked through the agent tool we built the orchestrator out of last week. Skills, your Claude.md memory. You scope what loads with the setting sources option, and setting it to an empty or narrow list is the SDK's version of bare mode, a hermetic run that ignores stray config it would otherwise pick up. The one SDK feature I want to single out is the permission callback can use tool. It's a function that runs on every single tool call and returns either allow optionally rewriting the arguments first or deny with a message explaining why. That is the SDK's real answer to there's no human to approve. You write the approval logic as code, deny any write under a system path, allow reads anywhere, rewrite a risky command into a safe one before it runs. The boundary stops being a person clicking a button and becomes a function you can unit test, which is a much better place for a boundary to live. Pitfall 1, reaching for skip permissions. Now, the two ways people get burned with all of this and how to recognize each before it costs you. The first is the dangerous one, and it's tempting precisely because it makes the immediate error go away. In a headless run, there's no human to approve tool calls, so people reach for the dangerously skip permissions flag, which is the same as setting permission mode to bypass. It skips every prompt. And in an unattended context, that flag removes the only thing standing between the model and your file system, your shell, and your network. Here's why that's worse than it sounds. Combine skip permissions with the bash tool and a misread instruction, or a prompt injection payload hiding in a file or a diff or a web page. The agent happens to read can run arbitrary commands. Delete files, curl your secrets out to someone else's server, force push over a branch. There's no approver standing there, and there's no undo. We'll spend a whole future episode on prompt injection defense and sandboxing, but the seed of it is right here. How do you recognize you're in this hole? That's the genuinely nasty part. The run looks like it worked in JSON output. It still reports subtype success. There's no prompt and no warning at runtime. You only find out afterward when you see file writes, git operations, or network calls in the history that you never intended to happen. The silence is the symptom. The fix is the least privileged discipline we've been building all episode. Never skip permissions in CI. Instead, write a tight allow list that names exactly the tools and command prefixes the job needs, minding that space before the asterisk footgun while you do it. Set a baseline permission mode like don't ask, feed data in through standard input instead of granting a tool to fetch it. Cap the run with max turns and max budget USD. In the SDK, deny by rule inside the permission callback and log every action with a post-tool use hook, which, by the way, is exactly the audit log pattern the autonomous safety episode is going to build on, and run bare with narrow setting sources. So a stray hook in someone's home config can't quietly widen the agent's powers behind your back. The rule to carry out the door in headless allow list what you need, and never blanket skip. Skip permissions belongs only in a throwaway sandbox you don't mind destroying, never against a real repo with real credentials attached. Pitfall 2. The June 15th billing change. The second pitfall isn't about safety, it's about your bill, and it's a direct callback to the cost engineering episode starting June 15th, 2026. Agent SDK and print mode usage on the subscription plans draws from a new separate monthly Agent SDK credit, distinct from your interactive usage limits. This is laid out in Anthropic's support article on using the SDK with your plan. Read carefully what's in and what's out, because the split is the whole point. The new separate credit covers your personal Agent SDK projects, non-interactive print mode, the Claude Code GitHub action, and third-party apps authenticating through the SDK. What stays on your normal subscription limits is interactive Claude Code web conversations and co-work. So the exact thing this episode teaches, headless and SDK runs, is the precise thing that just moved billing buckets. That's not a coincidence you can ignore. The amounts as published are a monthly Agent SDK credit of $20 on Pro, $100 on Max 5GEX, $200 on Max 20X, with the team and enterprise tiers landing on similar numbers. And here's the trap baked into it. When that monthly credit runs out, additional usage flows to pay-as-you-go credits at standard API rates, but only if you've turned usage credits on. The credit doesn't roll over from month to month, and it can't be shared or pooled across your teammates. It's a small fixed allowance per person that resets and vanishes. Why does this bite in headless specifically? Because interactive use is one human at a keyboard, naturally rate limited by your own typing speed. A script is not. A CI matrix can fan out hundreds of print mode calls in a few minutes, and a long SDK agent loop can churn through turns completely unattended overnight. Before June 15th, that all drew on your subscription and felt free. After it eats a small fixed monthly credit, $20 on Pro, and then bills at full API rates beyond that. A nightly batch that felt free can hand you a real API bill by morning. Recognizing it uses the same instrumentation we've been building this whole episode. In Stream JSON, watch for that API retry event with the error category billing error. Watch for runs that used to complete now aborting once the credit's exhausted. And above all, log the total cost in dollars field from every JSON result and sum it. Multiplied by your call volume, that number is your real spend, no dashboard required. Bounding it is a checklist you already hold all the pieces for. Put max budget USD on every unattended call, a hard ceiling that ends the run cleanly. Pin a cheaper model like Sonnet for batch work instead of reaching for Opus on every call. Cap the turns. Use the prompt catch friendly flags, bare mode, and the one that excludes the per machine system prompt sections, so repeated calls across machines reuse the cache instead of paying for it fresh each time. And run a prompt foo eval over print mode with JSON output before you ship the batch job, measuring your cost per task on a small sample instead of discovering it live in production. That's exactly the setup we built back in the cost episode, now earning its keep. One last decision, and make it on purpose rather than by accident. Leaving usage credits off means the job halts at the cap, which is predictable and gives you no surprise bill. Turning them on means the job finishes but can run up real charges, pick per workload. Don't just default into whichever one happens to be set. Where this goes next. Step back and notice what you can do now that you couldn't an hour ago. You can call Claude from a shell script or a Python program, get structured data back, chain turns across separate processes, bound both the cost and the blast radius, and define your own tools and your own approval logic in code. That's the agent loop with you standing outside it instead of inside it. Everything from here builds on exactly that. The Claude Code GitHub action, which the headless docs literally list as the next step, is this same machinery wired up to @mentionClaude on an issue or a pull request, and it's built out of that same new credit pool we just talked about. Review and fix loops, label-driven runs, auto PR workflows, they're all scripts and SDK calls with a trigger bolted on the front. And the permission discipline you practice today, allow list what you need, feed the data in, cap the run, log every action, is the on-ramp to the autonomous run safety episode, where boxing the agent in stops being a side note and becomes the entire topic. You've stopped pressing enter. Next, we start deciding what gets to press it for you. This episode was made with OC Devel Podcaster. You can turn anything into a podcast, a link, a document, or even a description of a topic you're curious about. And Podcaster researches and narrates it for you. Start your own at ocdevel.com/podcaster.